I like to call it the night from hell. Our first night on the boat, we picked up a mooring ball, the winds shifted, the waves rolled in, toddler's having a meltdown. One crew member's dealing with the toddler. We have somebody that's sick, and the other person on the boat has no anchoring experience, and we're dealing with 30, 35 knot winds at this point. And there's no way I can effectively train somebody on the bow at that point in those winds. So
Hey there, and welcome to Your Pocket Sailing Instructor, the number one educational podcast all about sailing. I'm Penny Caldwell, and I have been a sailing coach for over 25 years now. I'm here to help you reach your sailing goals. Whether you're looking for gear reviews, safety tips, or just some fun sailing stories, this podcast will have it all. Your Pocket Sailing Instructor is an educational and fun podcast all about things sailing. I plan on releasing weekly episodes every Monday to help you start off your week on a high note. So grab your coffee and join me for your weekly dose of all things sailing. All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of Your Pocket Sailing Instructor. Today is pretty exciting. I have a guest with me, Graham, and I'm going to let Graham introduce himself and talk a little bit about his sailing background. Hi, Graham.
Hello, how are you doing, Penny?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. So I've been sailing since, well, seriously sailing since 2017. I took a basic cruiser course with Penny on Kootenai Lake and kind of got addicted then. I had done a little bit of sailing before, but not much. And then since then, a lot of solo sailing, racing, and I've become a Sail Canada instructor since.
So today we are going to talk about a recent charter that you had to Croatia last fall in September. So just curious to know what you enjoyed about it, if you are planning on chartering again. And yeah, we'll start there.
The first trip, I didn't know what to expect. I was sent an itinerary by Bob and Marla had written it up. And like you read the itinerary and you're like, oh, okay, there's all these places. And you look it up on a map, but it's still, for me, I don't know. I didn't truly appreciate how much fun it was going to be. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get to sail and see cool stuff. Neat. And then like after the trip, I was just blown away by how much fun I had. So immediately started planning to go back.
Nice. So that first trip was to Croatia. I was on that trip as well. Graham and I were on different boats. I had my own boat. And Graham, like he mentioned, was actually sailing with our good friend Bob on a catamaran. So was that your first experience on a cat?
Yeah. Yeah, that was my first experience on a catamaran. It was a Bali 4.5, four cabins, the typical charter version, four cabins, four heads. More places to lay down than you can think about, but its sailing performance is pretty mediocre. We did get it up to about 11 knots on the beam.
Yeah.
Tacking was pretty much impossible without an engine. So,
yeah, it looked like you guys might have been struggling a little bit, but yeah. So for your second charter, when you went back to Croatia this past year, how did you pick your boat and what kind of research did you do before getting your trip organized?
So I had a size of boat in mind. I really thought that a 42 foot for how many people were going with me and for my sailing level for being the skipper, I thought that was going to be a really good size boat. And it was going to be right in about the price point we wanted. Sailed beautifully. Like, it was a lot of fun to sail that boat, but the boat that I got didn't have any of the add-on packages. So it had the cheapest mattresses, the cheapest cushions, and the least amount of hatches, which I did not realize when I booked it.
Yeah.
That was a shortcoming for sure.
So how many people did you have on the boat in the end?
Four adults and a toddler.
A toddler. We'll have to do a whole other episode on sailing with toddlers because I bet that was an experience too.
Yeah, that's where my gray hair came from.
Well, it looks great.
Thanks.
So as far as your charter, so who did you book your boat through this for this second trip? Because I know the first trip we, like you said, we organized with Marla and Bob, and there was a whole, I think we were eight boats or something crazy, and we had this whole thing organized, and we went through Croatia Yachting, I believe, yacht charters. And so this one you went with a different charter company, and how was that experience for you?
I used a broker, And the broker I used was 45 Degree Sailing, which, if anybody watches YouTube and anything about Croatia, I'm sure you've seen Nick and Mahina, and they're making all sorts of wonderful videos. Booking with them was wonderful. I definitely recommend that. We ended up booking with Adria Yacht Charters, which we were pretty limited because I booked late. So a lot of the boats were booked up at that time. So I was limited in selection. I was booking sort of mid-spring, which by then
Okay.
there's not much left.
Right. So you're planning your trip was end of September, which is kind of end of the peak season, and you booked your boat probably like April, Mayish or
Yeah, I think it was
okay.
April.
Right.
So 45 Degree Sailing was great to work with. They were a huge amount of help. If you book through a broker, you do end up paying a little more, but then you have somebody looking out for you when dealing with the charter company. So if you do have issues, like I had an issue with the boat, the one of the winches, the one for the main halyard, kept free spooling backwards, which
Not good.
that's not a feature you want.
No.
So I contacted Nick and they had somebody out there and fixed it for me. So that was great.
Great. So once you had your charter all figured out, what was kind of your next step in planning your upcoming trip?
So with the charter, I had one other sailor with me, which was my wife, and then two non-sailors. So finding sort of a balance of what I could do with one other person that was able to help me with the boat and two people that were not really sure if they were into sailing but more wanted a vacation. So finding that sort of balance between the two groups was initially the hardest part in planning.
As far as your non-sailors, how did you help them get organized for the trip? Like maybe packing or telling them a little bit like what to expect?
So packing, I sent them pretty much just a revised list from when we went to Croatia in, what was that, 2022 on the trip with you. What I learned from that trip, like what you needed, what you didn't, I sort of sent them a list for that to get them ready for the stuff on the boat because they were in the same city as me. I was able to have them over and we'd have wine or whatever, and we'd just watch a couple like YouTube videos and I'd talk them through the video of like what's going on. So we got there and they had an understanding of med mooring, basic safeties on the boat. I still had to do a talk through and walk through with everything. And my biggest mistake with that was not covering anchoring.
Ah, okay.
Because I thought I'd do it on the boat and it'd be super easy. But then I like to call it the night from hell. Our first night on the boat, we went and we picked up a mooring ball. The winds shifted, the waves rolled in. I had a person on the boat that was terribly seasick at this point, and they had been on shore for about 2 hours just sitting, trying to make the world stop rocking. But we needed to move the boat because there's no way they were going to be able to sleep in the bow when the boat's just bouncing up and down in the waves. So I ended up getting help from another sailor because it was dark. Toddler's having a meltdown. One crew member's dealing with the toddler. We have somebody that's sick, and the other person on the boat has no anchoring experience. And we're dealing with 30, 35 knot winds at this point. And there's no way I can effectively train somebody on the bow at that point in those winds. So glad we had assistance there. That definitely helped out. But we anchored. Everything was good for about an hour. The wind did a 180. We started to drag. We re-anchored. The wind did a 180. We had to move again because another boat was dragging into us. And like, I got maybe 2 hours of sleep that night. But by the end of it, I had crew that was really good at anchoring. So,
Yeah, no, baptism by fire, right? Jeez.
yeah.
Good old Mother Nature. She's always going to throw things at you. And yeah, seasickness is definitely another one to think about. I have a whole other episode on seasickness, so I won't get into it today. But like Graham was mentioning, when one of your crew goes down with seasickness, it does have a huge impact on the boat. And unfortunately, it seems to be one of those things that when one person starts feeling it and talking about it, other people start feeling and talking about it. And then you're all kind of sitting around going, am I also seasick? I don't know. So I'm glad that it just, ended up being one person. Unfortunate that you had such a harrowing experience. But I guess that's kind of how we learn, how we figure things out too. So glad it all worked out in the end. So let's move into a little bit about packing. So getting ready for your trip, what types of things did you pack? And between the two trips, what were some lessons learned about what you should bring with you?
So from the first trip, I was like, well, I need to backpack clothing for every day when I'm there. So I had brought way too much stuff. But you have a lot of opportunities to do laundry. It's definitely a bit more expensive now compared to 2022. It was, I think, 20 euros a load is what they were
Wow.
charging in 2023. So
That was a
that's
big
a bit
jump.
much. And that was the same price if you did it yourself or if somebody else did it.
Might as well have somebody else fold your underwear.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I dramatically decreased how much stuff I brought with me because you can do laundry. I brought a goggle and mask and flippers this time. I didn't on the first trip and I regretted it so much. There are so many cool things to see underwater in Croatia and I could
Yeah.
swim all day if somebody let me. So this time I brought a really nice first aid kit. It was small, but it had all the essentials like Benadryl, stuff for cough and cold, because on 2022, my daughter, she got a head cold and then we had nothing. And pharmacies are a whole nother thing in Croatia compared to what we're used to in Canada. So juggling all that was a challenge. So I was way more prepared with my first aid kit. What else did I think to bring this time that was useful? Clothes pegs. Good ones. Yes. I definitely did some hunting around and I bought what I thought were good ones. And then somebody else went to the dollar store and bought some super cheap ones. And the super cheap ones were way better than the good ones. So happy but annoyed by that. But it's
You
hard
got
to
what you
judge a.
needed in the end.
Yeah, it's hard to judge a clothes peg in a package, but definitely avoid ones with metal. There are ones out there where they no longer have a metal spring, and that's what they had, and they were great because then you don't get that little dot of rust showing up
Yeah.
on your face.
All right. So let's see. What was unexpected about your time in Croatia?
How easy it was to use like our debit cards or credit cards there. That was great. The tap is available there, which is super handy. And there's ATMs everywhere. I'd say it's better than Canada for your access to ATMs. Like they're just sticking out of the side of buildings everywhere you go. It's definitely worth checking the conversion rates on some of those machines. Like there were some that it was like a 15 to 25% markup. So if you're taking out 500 euros, that's a 100 euros you're paying to do that. So where the machine beside it might not do that. So definitely read what it says when you're
Now, when we
checking it
were
out.
in Croatia, it was still the kuna, and now they have transitioned to the euro. You mentioned the laundry. Did you find other major price differences or?
I found the food much more expensive at restaurants.
We loved the food. Oh my God, it was so good.
It
And
was
so
it,
cheap at the time with the kuna. Wow.
yeah, no, now it's still really, really good food, but it is expect to pay between 25 euros to 100 euros a person per meal, depending on where you're at. So
Yeah.
that's a substantial increase. Like the year before, I think in 2022, we were probably paying like $15 Canadian average for a meal. Like it was incredibly reasonable. So
Yeah, we ended up on my boat. I had originally provisioned to do quite a few meals on the boat because, we kind of wanted to maintain a realistic budget and we didn't want to be eating out all the time and spending a lot of money. And then we ate out a couple times and realized how cheap it was with the kuna. And so we kind of ditched a lot of our meals and just ended up eating out because the seafood was unbelievable and it was completely reasonably priced at the time. So we were really happy about that.
well, and some of the things like there's restaurants where they have a pier at the restaurant, and you can stay at their pier for free if you eat at the restaurant. And that's going to be one of the more expensive restaurants to eat at, but you got to think your moorage, your water, and your power are all included in that. So it's not as bad as it initially seems when you go and pay your tab at the restaurant, but it's definitely something to be mindful of. There's a lot of people are commenting that it was much more expensive in 2023 than it had been in previous years.
So for your marinas, speaking of marinas, how did you go about booking them and when did you book them and how did you find that whole experience?
So ACI Marinas has an app which you can use for the marinas, but you can't use for the city walls. So even though the city walls are operated by ACI port staff, you can't book spots through it that way. One of the nice things with dealing with 45 degree sailing is because they're locals, they have friends at each sort of city wall or whatever. So they would reserve a spot sort of through back channels for that, which was very nice. So
Yeah, that's pretty
everywhere
key.
it took a lot of the stress out of it. And they'd even have restaurant reservations made for us, and that was quite nice. But the ACI app was pretty good. Don't do a guest login, actually create a user profile, because I did a guest login and then I wanted to change my booking and I couldn't do it because it wanted me to do it on the app, but you can't log into your. Yeah, so that was a lesson learned there. But I finally ended up emailing ACI because it said to call and they told me to use the app. So I sent them an email and that worked. So that got it
Okay.
fixed.
You got it
But,
sorted out. Yeah, I remember with when we were there, because we had 8 boats, it was a bit of a challenge, a bit stressful for for us, the skippers. We'd have our morning meeting and then figure out, okay, we're gonna head over to such and such marina, and we would almost have to designate one person to kind of skip the whole sailing of the day and book it over to the marina to get 8 spots available for us. So that was a little bit stressful. So good to know that 45 degree sailing broker to go with to help organize that.
Oh, absolutely. And definitely book ahead. Like marinas like Korchula, I had booked ahead there, and you come in and the wind's always blowing you out of the marina. So everyone's sitting there stern to the entrance because we're waiting our turns to go in, and you hear the radios just blowing up with people radioing in saying they're there, and nobody at the marina is responding to anyone. But like I had a reservation, and we had a 9 hour sail that day to get there. And we got
Wow.
there at about 4, and there was probably 30 boats waiting outside the entrance that didn't have reservations. And there was, I'd say half of them ended up getting turned away. So they had to go as it's getting dusk and sort of panic
Yeah.
anchor, which that just sounds like unnecessary stress. So definitely book ahead.
And how did you find the med mooring experience at most of the marinas? Is that something you kind of managed to work through and figure out and
The first time it was nerve-wracking, and it was in my head, it was so much better because there was no other boats. It was in Verbowska, and I went to the city pier and there was no other boats, and it was my first time med mooring, and like it wasn't perfectly smooth, but it wasn't ugly or anything. And then I was talking to the guy after, and he's like, "Yeah, well, that's the hardest way you have to med moor is when there's no other boats, because usually you just sort of let your boat drift into one. And you're sort of held beside them while you sort out your lines and stuff." And I was like, "Oh, help."
I had that experience too at when we were in Croatia. I can't remember where we were, but one of the marinas, I was one of the first ones to show up, but I had already med moored a few other times, and I remember thinking, oh God, this is not going to be because I have the entire wall to choose from, and the guy was walking back and forth trying to figure out where I was going to land, and anyways, in the end it all worked out. But yeah, you don't have that extra leverage, so. Well, I'm glad it worked out though. It is actually a very easy maneuver once you get used to it. And I'm assuming, did you have bow thrusters on your Hans?
Yes. Well, and once you get that single stern line on, you're set. Everything can calm down, everything can slow down, because you just need to put a little bit of tension on that line. And with the, like, if you turn your rudder, you can keep the boat positioned just off that one line perfectly straight off the dock, and you can hold tension on it, even if there's wind, and sort your other lines out. And yeah, that seems stressful, like you're getting this big boat so close to the wall, but it is so smooth and calm. You just take your time, and it goes quite well. Like by the end of the trip, it was nothing to med more, and I think we only did it like a half dozen times.
So as far as your itinerary, did you set that up, or did 45 degree sailing kind of give you some ideas, or in the previous trip, I guess?
So I had places that I really wanted to go to again. And I had a Zoom call with Nick from 45 Degree Sailing, and we did the itinerary planning because I paid for the bareboat assist through them. So they do itinerary planning, they book your marinas, and they're just there the whole time helping out with, like, if you're like, "Oh, I'm kind of thinking about going to this island," they'll be like, "Okay, if you go and anchor at this bay, it's great. This one's not so great, and the restaurant's not good." They have that insider information that just made it a lot smoother. We had a plan. Like, our plan was, I left Split, we went to Salta, then to Vrbovska, to Korčula, and then down to the national parks and up to Vis. And then from there, we hadn't really finalized the plan because I wasn't sure how people were going to be feeling. And I think that was good because the first night at anchor was rough with our sick person. And then the second day, like it was beautiful sailing. We had 20 knots of wind, but that was not fun for somebody who is seasick. So we got to Vrbowska and I'm just like, that's it. We're spending 2 nights here. Everyone can sort of exhale, relax, explore the area, get feeling well, and then we'll carry on. So that sort of threw off the initial plan, but it worked out quite well. We ended up spending 2 nights everywhere we went, except for one place. We
Perfect.
spent 1 night and then we put 3 nights at another spot. I'd say if you itinerary plan, make sure that everyone understands it's kind of fluid. Yeah, the weather can change, how people are feeling can change. If you see every boat is heading to the same
Yeah.
marina as you,
Go the other way.
maybe adjust on the fly. Like when I was sailing from Salta to Vrbowska, I ended up in this pack of like 30 boats. So
God.
I just trimmed my sails and started like slowly sneaking past people. And as I go by, I'd be like, hey, how's it going? Where are you headed? People being friendly, they tell me where they're going. I'm like, okay, one person not going where we're going. One person, another, another, another. And it was
Yeah.
great because most of them were headed to Stargrad. So
Ah, I was gonna say Starigrad is one of my favorites, yeah.
definitely. But the first night, that's where like
Busy, busy.
90% of the boats are headed. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really liked your approach of doing 2 nights at a spot. Kind of on that vein, what were other things that you might have found a little overwhelming or unexpected, I guess? You talked a little bit about that anchoring experience.
Leaving the marina for the first time, definitely. The 2022 trip, I left out of Trogir, and that marina is much bigger than Split. Split, you're very crowded, and of course, I was like 3/4 of the way in on the finger. And like, I always walk the pier first to like see where I'm going to be going and get an idea for what the line situation was like. And there was a couple spots where I figured I had like 2 to 3 feet on each side of the boat to try and get it out of that marina. So that was a bit nervous going through there, but like it went fine. Bow thruster definitely helped because you can just do that little blast and it just gets your turn happening a little faster at lower speed. So that's just wonderful. Yeah, leaving that marina was definitely stressful. It went well, but it was stressful. That one's tight. Trogir is a much nicer marina. Way better set up, and it's got huge showers and a restaurant and everything. Whereas the Split Marina is just squeezed into this spot that's not ideal. Like, it's nice for convenience from Split, but if I was to book, well, I have booked a boat, but I'm not booking one in that marina just so I can avoid it because it's just too tight, too much chaos.
Yeah, a lot of chaos for sure. And then what about the Bali? You mentioned that you guys had this big catamaran. Did you enjoy having the Bali, or is did you are you booking another catamaran in your future?
I really enjoyed the catamaran, honestly. I do like sailing on a monohull, but if I'm chartering, there's definitely something to be said about a catamaran. Like you have the space, everyone can sort of go and do their own thing on the boat, and you're not constantly tripping over each other, which is something we found on the Haunts. This year coming up, I'm doing a 40-foot or 46-foot monohull again.
Okay.
Four cabin this time. And it's a DeFore Grand Large, so
Nice.
a little different, but I've booked it again through 45 degree sailing. But I want to do catamarans. It'll be in the future. They're just the cost is a fair bit more, and right now it's more about doing more charters to build extra experience doing them than
Right.
saving up for 2 years to do one big charter kind of a thing. So I would prefer a catamaran, definitely.
Yeah,
The
nice.
Bali, I don't know if I'd do a Bali. I'd do a Bali if I had mostly non-sailors on the boat because you get the most amount of comfort. You get like everybody gets a queen bed, everyone gets a decent sized bathroom. Like it's massive. But if I had sailors, I'd probably aim more towards a Fountain Pajot just because they're a bit more of a sailor's boat. A happy medium between the two from everything I've seen is a lagoon, though I haven't sailed a lagoon. I have sailed on a Fountain Pajot and a Bali, and the Fountain Pajot was way more fun to sail. And
Nice.
that was down in the Caribbean, and like 25 knots of wind, we were doing 9 knots close reaching. But we could almost close haul, but and you could tack. You could tack, you could trim sails and go,
Yeah.
whereas the Bali just had the self-tacking jib, and
Oh, yeah.
it's just a huge thing. So
Yeah. So, what are some of your boat life tips for people when they're chartering?
I thought going into the charter of 2023, I covered this well, but I don't think I covered it well enough, was sort of what was expected of each person on board and what they're sort of like just policing their own mess and like picking up after themselves. And if one person cooks and other people clean, like the sharing of tasks. And like if we're leaving a marina at say 7 in the morning because we got a big sail, okay, I need people up, I need help, right? This year I'm call it's like a roommate agreement essentially, but it's gonna outline everyone's sort of responsibilities and the expectations of them on the boat, so you don't end up with a person that just sort of sits there with a glass of wine in hand and doesn't really contribute anything. So they're on an all-inclusive vacation while
A
everyone else
floater.
is doing all the work, right? That's definitely one thing I'm going to work a lot harder this trip coming up to cover well and make sure that people going into it have a good understanding of how they need to contribute and that it takes everyone to operate a boat. Like
For sure.
shouldn't
Yeah,
be left to a few people.
that's something that I've learned over the years through teaching live aboard courses and stuff like that, where I basically set up a schedule, and I did that even with my charter group, where I had someone cleaning the head every morning, someone cleaning the galley every morning, one person's on breakfast, one person's on dinner. Lunch, we kind of did a, or no, breakfast was a free for all, and then lunch, we had pre-made lunches, and but everybody had a specific day, a specific role. And even though I was doing the charter with a bunch of close friends, I wanted to make sure that there was no opportunity for people to kind of get into their own habits or whatever, and made it very clear of who is doing what. And then as far as some of the roles on the boat, we kind of naturally fell into a habit of, you know, one person is on the starboard bow line and one person's on the starboard stern line or whatever. So I had my dock line people. Did you guys do a similar type of thing where they kind of had the same jobs when you were coming into your marina?
Yes, definitely. Especially for the first 2 or 3 times that we were men mooring, just so we could sort of build that experience and comfort level as a team as we're trying to dock this boat. And then as we got more experience, I still designated people jobs, but like I'd let them try different ones because now it was everyone was a bit more comfortable. We were able to deal with a changing situation easily. Whereas the first few times, everyone's just kind of like, what do I do? What do I do? Like, right? Even though it's like not that big of a deal, like we're all like that the first time we do something new or just hesitant. And no, so it worked out in that regard, definitely. And towards the end of the trip, like the first few sails, I was at the helm the whole time, which I love sailing, but I didn't want to be the person on the helm every day. Especially when it's like 30 degrees out and you have 1 knot of wind and you're motoring for 6 hours. Like having somebody willing to change out with you is definitely nice there. But after the first few sort of passages we did, then definitely more people were taking turns at the helm and getting more comfortable. But I think a lot of that was that I just had non-sailors, so they were quite sort of apprehensive of stepping behind the helm of this 42-foot boat when they've never steered a boat or done anything close to that. So,
Yeah, that just definitely plays into it. I had a couple crew that were very much like, I want to learn how to do this. And so they kind of stepped in there. And I guess knowing too that I'm a coach, you're a coach, so we know how to kind of walk people through these types of things and introduce them to new things on the boat. And so I think that helped to make it a little bit easier for them. But yeah, there's definitely that initial hesitancy. Like you said, even for us, it's a new boat. You're getting to know the systems. It's a new area. There's a lot to look out for, a lot to think about. So there's a lot going on.
and especially leaving the marina the first time. Like you get that apprehension. You're like, okay, I'm on this boat. This is a very nice big boat. And you're like looking at those tiny little channels you have to go through between all those mooring lines. And you're like, ah, but like, no, it's all
Totally.
right.
So, talking about the boat, like, what are some things that somebody should expect from a charter boat when they pick it up?
Things to be broken. There'll be broken things. Our boat was pretty rough. Both of the cockpit hatches, the latches were completely like unscrewed. So, and it was right where you sat when you were on the helm, like that's where your lines and everything went into. So you'd be sitting there and the boat would heel and then the hatch would slide sideways and you're like stumbling and then you'd like, so I fixed that.
Wow.
I fixed those second night on the boat. And then lots of little small things like snaps or clips and stuff, or like the lazy bed or lazy sheets are just right. So I don't have that stress of like if I went there and it was a brand new boat and I was the first charter, my stress would be through the roof. Whereas I get to the boat and I see there's like some minor scuffs and scratches and repairs, then you're like, it's like rent-a-wreck back in the day, right? It was much, much easier to rent one of those than a brand new like Porsche 911 or something like that.
Right.
So expect some things to be broken. Well, it also depends on the company you book with. I've learned a lot that don't judge a comp well, do judge a company by its prices, but don't go for the best deal because it comes back. Because I went with well, I was limited in selection. I was choosing between two boats, and in hindsight, I should have gone for the other one. It was a little more expensive, but the company I went with, they had a lot more add-on fees. So the initial cost up front looked like it was less, but then they added all these other fees that added up to like another 1500 euros on top of that. And then you're in the territory, well, I could have paid for that boat that was a slightly higher end and paid about the same money. So definitely worth looking at. When you do your boat inspection, definitely document what's broken. Like ours, the settee, the table leaf or the leaf that came out so you could make it into a bed was completely broken in half. The people before or somebody had like stood on it and snapped that piece. So that was broken. There was a lot of little things that were broken, like
So
the
did you,
autopilot, the cover, if you put it on, the whole autopilot like control would pull out of the hull. So I just didn't put the covers on at all. Otherwise you were fumbling around with the silly things. But
Oh boy. So did you take photos of these things or just write them down, kind of? Or what would you do?
well, when I did it all wrong completely. I'll admit that, and I knew better. But like, I was talking with the guy at the charter company, and we were going through the boat. And like, whenever I saw things that were broken, I'm like, "Oh, that's broken." He's like, "Meh." I'm like, oh, "Okay, this is broken." He's like, "Meh, we'll fix it at the end of the season." I'm like, oh, "Okay, that's broken." He's like, "Meh." I'm like, "All right." So he's not really worried about it. And then I was talking to him, and he's like, he really only cared if there was big damage to the boat at that point. And he's like, if it's gel coat, he's going to be able to tell because there'll be powder left at the break. Like, even if somebody was to like try and cover it up by like washing it and scrubbing it and stuff, there'll still be fresh powder there just because of how gel coat sort of reacts to the sun, right? So yeah, he really set me at ease, which sort of made me not be proactive. But then like day two, I was like, that wasn't very smart, Graham. So I went and I made a big list of all the things, but when I brought the boat back, I had broken a couple things and I pointed them out and
He
they
wasn't
didn't
worried.
care.
Oh,
No.
okay.
So,
So yeah, as long
and
as it's on the when you're bringing the boat back, if they're still pretty laid back, that's fine. But yeah.
yeah, well, and like the one thing that I was worried about was the bimini, one of the stitches completely let go all the way across. It's because we had unzipped it because we were hanging a towel to sort of provide shade for the toddler so he wasn't getting heat stroke because he fell asleep in an inconvenient location like toddlers do.
Yeah.
So we were like trying to shade him so he didn't get sunburn or heat stroke or whatever. And then somebody tightened the two straps that go forward because after we undid that zipper, then the bimini was moving a fair bit. So they had tightened those and I didn't realize. And then I went to zip it back up and there was now too much tension on it and just blew out that one seam completely. So,
That
oops.
happens.
Yep.
Yeah.
Why you have insurance. But no, they didn't. They just, I helped them take it off and they went and sewed it and it was back on the boat in like an hour.
Great. Well, I think that we've covered a lot of things today on this episode. Is there anything else that you want to add? Any kind of last minute thoughts or anything that we haven't touched on?
It was definitely worth it. Like, I hope, I don't want people to
You're
like
doing it
get,
again.
yeah, do it again. It's a lot of fun. It's an
And
incredible way to see another country. It's a, I would say it's a lower impact level of tourism. I just feel like you're not like we used 80 liters of diesel in 2 weeks, whereas if you went and did some bus trips and stuff like that, you're It's all
Right.
adding up quite quick. Or we went all over Croatia and we used hardly any fuel. Yeah, I'd say it's a little bit friendlier as long as you're mindful of the environment and
Yeah.
think about it. Definitely worth it.
And are you looking at some trips to other destinations? Have you been doing research on that? What's on your hit list?
Yes, I'm definitely looking at other locations. The problem is Croatia can be quite inexpensive to charter compared to other countries. Like I've looked and it's about 25% higher on average to charter other places. So it's definitely really nice for that. And it's a great place for sailors to start out. But I think I really want to do some more Caribbean sailing and maybe one day do some things in Asia or the South Pacific anyways, but that would be a much higher cost. Those charters are very expensive, so that would be a fair ways out. Whereas the Caribbean sort of like cost-wise the middle ground compared to Croatia or the Pacific, so
Great. Bucket list items. There you go. It's
absolutely.
good to have goals to work towards. All right. Well, thanks so much, Graham, for spending that time with me today. It was great to see you again, and thanks for all of your insight with everything, and hopefully we'll get you back on the podcast again soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that episode with Graham. And once again, thank you so much to my patrons who continue to support me throughout all of these episodes. That is greatly appreciated. Don't forget to share, like, and subscribe to the podcast so that I can reach more people. And I look forward to chatting with you guys again next week. Bye.